Mike Audio. I'm Philip Tarone, Associate Editor of Make Magazine, and for the next half an hour or so, we're going to be talking to Cory Doctorow from the EFF. A lot of you probably know Cory from BoingBoing.net or from his science fiction novels that are quite popular. Well, he'll be talking about what happened with the broadcast flag. It was struck down last week, thank goodness. The clock was ticking loudly. July 1st, we might have not been able to have devices that could record and transfer and do things the way that we wanted. And if you were someone who liked to tinker and liked to make things, this was a pretty big threat. Well, luckily it was struck down, and Corey's going to tell us a little bit about that, and here we go.
Hey Phil, this is Corey, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about the broadcast flag. So my first day at EFF, I flew to Hollywood to a meeting of the Broadcast Protection Discussion Group, which was sitting down to write the broadcast flag. And it was their first meeting ever. And what they were sitting down to write was a regulation that they were going to try to get Congress to pass that said, if you're going to make a digital television device, you need permission from a regulatory agency or a lawmaker or a studio or someone. They weren't sure yet who it was. And that permission would be withheld based on whether or not your features were things that the Hollywood studios thought would be bad for business. So Andy Sidos, who's the guy who actually wrote the broadcast flag regulation, he's a guy at Fox, and he said, you know, all we're trying to do here is create a polite marketplace. All we want is a marketplace where before you disrupt our business, you give us a chance to respond, decide whether or not we think it's a good idea, and so on. After all, it's our content. Why shouldn't we be able to control how you use it? And it's a funny and slippery argument. You know, on the one hand, I think most people understand that polite marketplace is code for, you know, regulatory monopoly. But on the other hand, it is kind of seductive to say, well, you know, if I make the wine, why shouldn't I be able to control what bottle you pour it into? If it's my content, why can't I control the content devices? The thing to remember is that copyright is a limited monopoly given to people who make copyrighted works over who can copy them and under what circumstances, right? I'm a novelist. I get to control who can copy my novels under most circumstances. But what that limited monopoly certainly doesn't do is it doesn't give you the right to design all the devices that might someday be used to copy something like your book or your movie or your music. And that's what the studios were up to. What they wanted to do was bootstrap that tiny little limited monopoly over who gets to make a copy into an unlimited monopoly over what kind of devices can be invented. So there was this long, long wrangle in Hollywood where we went back every 3 or 4 weeks and we had these long, shouty meetings about what the broadcast flag would contain and what it wouldn't. And the whole time, the studios were like, you know, we've got a lawmaker, a guy named Representative Billy Tozen, who's now out of office as far as I know. We've got this lawmaker, and he's just really chomping at the bit to make this law. He really wants it because, you know, we've told him that no one's going to buy a digital television in America until such time as there are high-quality movies available on DTV, and we're not going to make any movies available for DTV unless we have a broadcast flag rule because we just don't feel safe. And, you know, our representative wants this law, we're dawdling, why can't we come to a consensus, blah, 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 blah. So at the end of the day, they finally ship out their consensus. And what their consensus was like a 20-page report of the co-chairs who had basically elected themselves. They said, well, we're going to have a co-chair from Consumer Electronics and one from IT and one from the studios. You have to remember that pretty much all the big consumer electronics companies like Sony and Philips and so on were in the room, as were most of the big IT companies like Apple and Microsoft, all of them there selling out their birthright for a handful of shiny movies, you know, saying, yeah, we'll put your tiny little $60 billion industry in charge of the design of our $600 billion industry's devices. God knows why. So this 20-page report from the co-chairs was accompanied by about 200 pages of dissent from various companies and entities like EFF. EFF managed to bring in a lot of other organizations that thought that this would be a bad idea. We shipped a lot of dissent, but the most amazing thing was the dissent from the companies, because you had companies like Microsoft that had been playing along the whole way suddenly change their tune when it came to the end. And the reason they changed their tune is that the studios revealed that what they were anticipating wasn't a set of objective criteria for what kind of technology could go into a digital television device. It wasn't like, well, your digital TV needs to be covered in so much epoxy, it needs to use so many bits of crypto to encrypt the video objects on the hard drive and so on. What they said was, your DTV device will only exist lawfully in the marketplace if you can get one or more studios to approve it. Right? In other words, we want a veto over devices. And what's more, the studios revealed that the only devices that they were planning on approving out of the gate were devices that were created by these large combative consortia like the 4C group and the 5C group. These are groups with four or five companies in them, and the groups hate each other's guts, and they're very competitive with one another. And what they have that's different from Microsoft is they have a much weaker bargaining position, right? Microsoft is, if Microsoft were the preferred supplier of DRM for digital televisions, then they'd be like Macrovision is today. Macrovision supplies all the DRM for VCRs, for VHS cassettes, and for DVDs. And Macrovision charges the Hollywood studios a fortune for the use of their technology. And the studios don't want that. They don't want a powerful company providing DRM. They want these divided and weakened consortia providing their DRM. So Microsoft changed their tune. Philips changed their tune. All these companies said that this is a really bad idea. The other group that came out to say that this is a really bad idea were the free software companies and the companies that were interested in free software and open source. And the reason that they came out is because the studios wanted to establish what's called a robustness rule. And the robustness rule said that this technology needs to be designed to resist end-user modification. So you're a maker, and you want to take something that you've bought apart and mod it, and improve it, understand it, tinker with it, whatever. Under the broadcast flag rule, everything used in connection with DTV would have to be designed in such a way as to prevent you from doing that. That's really bad news. And it would be the first time that the government had ever made a rule that said that free software, open source, and open hardware would be forbidden in connection with some technology or another. It's funny because, you know, in real security, not in DRM, which is this sort of bogus shell game that calls itself security, but in real security, openness is the most important practice. You know, as Bruce Schneier says, anyone can think of a security measure so secure that he can't imagine a way of breaking it. So the only experimental methodology that we have for figuring out whether or not something's secure is to publish its workings and invite everyone who's smarter than you to examine them and see if they can figure out a way to break it. Right? That's how we do it. So 200 pages of dissent, 20-page report, goes to Congress and goes to Billy Tozen. And Billy Tozen basically freaks out and says, no way, I'm not going to introduce a law based on this. Are you kidding me? This is controversial. I wanted something nice and uncontroversial to introduce. I don't want to be seen as the guy who's going to break my constituents' televisions. Right? Because that's the, I think every lawmaker has an intuitive grasp of the fact that if you break your constituents' primary form of entertainment, they're not going to vote for you anymore. You know, the one thing you can't do to Americans, you can lie to them, you can steal from them, you can empty out their social security accounts and, you know, cram religion down their throats and body cavity search them at the airport. The one thing you totally can't do is take away their televisions or they'll never vote for you again. Oh, there goes an alarm here. Anyway, so Tozen says, I'm not going to send this, I'm not going to put this through Congress. So what happens next is Fritz Hollings, who is the Democratic senator from South Carolina, who is the chairman of the committee that regulates copyright, sent a letter to the chairman of the FCC saying, you know, I've been examining your mandate at the FCC, the mandate you have from Congress to regulate the airwaves, and it seems to me that you don't actually need our assistance. You don't need a mandate from Congress. You already have it. It's already within the scope of your brief to go ahead and regulate, to make this regulation. Now, the FCC has to publish all the memos they receive. It's the part of the Sunshine Laws. So the FCC publishes this memo. It's a Word doc. And we get it. We open it up. And it turns out that that Word doc originated on a computer that belongs to a staffer at the Motion Picture Association of America, who apparently are the entity to whom powerful Senate committee chairmen are outsourcing their legal advice. So this goes to the FCC along with a letter from Billy Tozen saying pretty much the same thing. You know, we think that you've got jurisdiction to do this, so you don't really need us or our help. It goes to the FCC, and the FCC begins proceedings on this, and they get thousands and thousands and thousands of comments from people who go like, are you out of your frigging mind? This is the dumbest idea I've ever heard. First of all, it's not going to stop one show from being recirculated over the internet. Because all you need to do to take a show off the air and recirculate it over the internet is acquire a device that complies with the digital television standard, which is called ATSC, that was built before the broadcast flag came into effect. And just take that digital television receiver and dump its output down to your hard drive, and then you can put it on the internet. But what's more, they said that the studios don't have a problem here, right? You're trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist. So the studios are like, oh, you know, digital piracy, it's going to put us all out of business. And you say, well, be that as it may, you guys just had the best box office year on record. And they say, oh, yeah, well, sure, we did this year. And then you say, well, and you just had your best DVD year on record. And they go, yeah, well, that was this year. And you go, and last year it was your best year on record until then. And they say, well, that's true, too. And you say, well, isn't the trend that you guys are making more money every year, year on year, no matter what's happening with file sharing? And they say, well, yeah, that's true, but, you know, it might change someday. It's like saying, you know, Your Honor, I know I ate my seatmate, and I know the plane hadn't crashed yet, but it might have crashed. And, you know, if it had crashed, we would have had to turn to cannibalism. I was just making sure that, that I got mine. And what's more, even if there does emerge a problem with digital television being redistributed on the internet, will that problem be different from the problem of analog television being redistributed on the internet? After all, if you download an analog television signal today from our program for today from Kazaa or over BitTorrent or whatever, generally speaking, it's been down-resed and downsampled and compressed to something that's much lower resolution than the thing that originated on the analog network. And the reason that people do that isn't because they don't want a high-resolution product. It's because the network can't carry high-resolution product. It can't even carry standard definition product. And so what they do is they downsample it. And with digital television, what they're going to do is downsample that too. And you may say, well, network capacity is going to increase. You know, eventually people will be sharing full-resolution stuff. And that may happen eventually. But keep in mind that the ATSC high-definition transport stream is like 19.4 megabits per second. It's going to be a long time before people are trading 19.4 megabit per second 90-minute feature films over the internet. They're going to be downsampling them and down-resing them to nothing. So they didn't have a new problem. They didn't have a new problem because on the one hand, people would take the digital television stuff and treat it just like the analog television stuff and put it on the internet, and so you wouldn't be able to tell the analog TV stuff from the DTV stuff. And on the other hand, ripping analog TV just isn't that hard, right? Every TV show aired pretty much is available for free download over the internet. So we don't need this new DTV stuff, any new ease of use that comes in as a result of DTV to rip stuff and put it on the internet. We've already got an easy enough system to rip stuff and put it on the internet. After all, once everything is available on the internet, how much easier does it need to be for the studios to have a problem or not have a problem? So Holling sends his letter, Tozen sends his letter, the FCC hold these hearings, they get all this input, and they disregard it all. And the reason they disregard it all is because they're an expert agency. And expert agencies are only supposed to hear from experts, and when they hear from the general public, they go, well, you know, that's nice, but you should be writing to your congressman. He's the guy who's interested in what the general public have to say. We only listen to technical experts. And mostly they didn't even listen to those. They only listen to the technical experts from the studios, and they pass the rule. And we went into overdrive, and we brought a lawsuit. And the lawsuit we brought said, the FCC doesn't have jurisdiction to do this. The FCC has jurisdiction over the airwaves, right? That's over the program while it's been modulated as an RF signal and is being transmitted over the air over a wire. And what they don't have jurisdiction over is what the FCC is what you do with this stuff after it lands on your antenna and gets turned back into a video program. And it's funny, we're not alone in asserting this. The motion picture studios went to the FCC not long ago and actually filed comments to this effect because they said, you know, the FCC wanted to regulate movies, right? They wanted to say, oh, well, we don't think, you know, dirty movies should be shown on TV. And the Motion Picture Association went to them and said, well, what makes you think that you've got regulation over the programming? You just have regulation over the airwaves, right? You have no regulation over this stuff. It's like, we want no regulation for us, lots of regulation for those technology guys. So we went to the court, and we won in the lower division, but the courts, the appeals court said, well, we're not sure that you guys have standing. And it sounds like you've got a good case here, but do any of you actually make devices that are affected by this regulation? So it was EFF and Public Knowledge and the Library Association, so and all these public interest groups brought this thing. And so we went back, and we submitted papers to the effect that we did have standing, that we were involved in producing DTV equipment. EFF represents a technology project called GNU Radio, and we develop on Myth TV, both of which would be covered by this regulation, and so on. And so the studios lost. and the court ruled in our favor. And they ruled in our favor unequivocally. They didn't say that this was a procedural problem. They didn't say that this was a problem with, you know, the way that the regulation was written. They said this is not allowed. The FCC just doesn't get to make this kind of rule, period. And so it's a pretty crushing victory. And why does this matter? Well, it matters because, on the one hand, this would have banned free software in all DTV applications, and it would have required everyone who makes components used in DTV applications, like video cards and hard drives and so on, to design them so that they couldn't have free software drivers, they couldn't have open source drivers. So it would have killed tinkering. It's also important because it would have restricted the features for digital television to those features that didn't disrupt the Hollywood studios, the features that were compatible with the polite marketplace that Andy Seidos wants. That's like DVD. DVD only gets features if the studios approve it, because the DVD licensing is controlled by the DVD CCA, which is controlled by the studios. So if 10 years ago you bought $1,000 worth of DVDs, 10 years later all you can do with them is watch them, right? There's no dividend paid on your investment in DVD media. But compare that to CDs, which have no DRM and are pretty similar technologies. You know, they're kind of made in the same factories and so on. They're read with the same lasers these days. Well, if you bought $1,000 worth of CDs 10 years ago, 10 years later, you'd find yourself with a collection of discs that you could turn into MP3s and load onto your iPod, make them into ringtones, mash them up, turn them into karaoke, use them to wake you up with your alarm clock, and so on and so forth. All of that stuff is the dividend, the innovation dividend that's paid by having a marketplace that's not polite, a marketplace where anyone can innovate. So what happens next? Well, what happens next is the studios are certainly going to go to Congress, and they're going to ask Congress to make a broadcast flag law. Because what the court said was that Congress could make a broadcast flag law, but the FCC couldn't make a broadcast flag regulation until that law was in place. So we need to convince every lawmaker out there that breaking our televisions is suicide. That's an important thing. Right? Breaking your constituents' television is suicide. Just repeat that to yourself. And whenever anyone asks you about it, whenever the press talks to you about it, repeat that. Because it is. Right? There's no good reason for them to break our TVs, especially when it solves no problem. The other thing that's going to happen is that the fight around the world for the international versions of the broadcast flag is going to get really, really hot. So here in Europe, where I live, we've been working on something called the DVB CPCM. DVB is the standards body that makes digital television standards, and CPCM is the DRM work that they've been hijacked into doing. And it's like the broadcast flag, but 100 times more restrictive. And it will be bundled in with the DTV standard, so that when governments adopt DTV modulation schemes, they'll also get DTV DRM, which is really scary stuff. And it's being promulgated by pretty much the same people. I mean, you go to the Broadcast Protection Discussion Group meetings in Hollywood, you see the same faces around the table more or less as you see at the Copy Protection Content Management Group at the DVB forum. So I go to these meetings, and it's going to be really fun to go to the next one of these. I think that this is going to be a victory all around, because in Europe, part of the reason that there's been some favor for the DVB forum is that and for the CPCM project is that if the Americans have DRM, then the Europeans need to close the DRM gap. But the Americans aren't going to get DRM. Their free-to-air programming won't have any DRM in America, as it should be. So this is going to be a victory all the way around. This is a really important day in the history of technology and regulation. This is a turning point, I think. And it's been made possible by public knowledge and EFF and our fellow travelers who really, really went to the wall on this one, who really identified a problem early on and fought it tooth and nail and won a complete and utter crushing victory for our side. So I'll point out, finally, that all these groups are nonprofit groups, including EFF, my employer. We give out tax receipts for donations. If you're making good coin, this year you're going to have to give a lot of that to Uncle Sam, and you can save yourself giving it to Uncle Sam by giving some of it to us. You know, charitable donations, you can write them off on your taxes. But even if you're not making great coin, EFF and public knowledge, most of our money comes from organizations and individuals who give $100 a year or less. Right, people who really can't afford giant amounts of money, but who manage to give enough money to keep us afloat, to keep us going. And we're winning important victories. You know, EFF legalized cryptography. We established the idea that coppers need to get a warrant before they can read your email. We're fighting Grokster in the Supreme Court that will establish the principle that P2P networks aren't responsible for what the people who use them do. And we're winning the broadcast flag. We're writing new treaties at the World Intellectual Property Organization that will ensure a fair deal for people who share information for educators, for archivists, and for people who make information available to disabled people. We're doing really good work. And if you go to EFF.org, you can directly support it. Thank you very much, Phil. I hope you have a great day. I'm walking on air. Bye.
Make Audio is the audio program for Make Magazine. If you want to learn more about this particular audio program or subscribe to Make Magazine, visit makezine.com.